The magazine Fast Company dubbed Jesse Thorne the most important person in entertainment you've never heard of. Well, if you're a loyal WAMU listener, you probably have heard of him. His show Bullseye plays on our airwaves on Sunday mornings. If you haven't caught it yet, you're missing the chance to hear Jesse dive into pop culture with the most creative people out there, from authors to musicians to actors. The program is only one in Jesse's network of entertainment and comedy podcasts called Maximum Fun. Here to talk about how public radio can appeal to younger listeners and how he finds the balance between entertainment and journalism is Jesse Thorne. He is the host of a number of public radio programs and podcasts, as I mentioned, including Bullseye, Jordan, Jesse Go, and Judge John Hodgman, which are all produced by the aforementioned Maximum Fun. Jesse, good to see you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Kojo. What an honor to be here.
Glad you could join us. What you now call Bullseye started as The Sound of Young America, a radio show you founded in 2000 while you were at the University of California at Santa Cruz. How has the show evolved beyond just its name since your college days?
Well, in my college days, there was a lot more baloney. I started it with two of my funniest friends from college, and the idea was, let's take an hour and just do everything we can think of. And we wrote radio plays. We had interview guests on. We did comedy bits. I even produced a few kind of like This American Lifestyle pieces before I realized how much work that was. And then eventually my co-host graduated and went and moved to Southern California to work in show business. And I was there all by myself. And I didn't want to do comedy alone, which is a real sad business. And so it became an all-interview show. And, that was 10 or 12 years ago now. And, we've been refining it ever since.
Well, it's funny because your mom grew up here in Washington. And the story you told sounds exactly like the story of the late Ed Walker and Willard Scott, who started at American University in 1951 on the radio station that started in that year doing radio and comedy and ended up making great careers for themselves over the next half of a century or so. But how did you get into radio? What was your goal to become a national public radio star?
Yeah, if it is, I still haven't achieved it. I think I got into radio. There's wonderful characteristics of radio. There's a kind of intimacy and community that you don't get from other media. But the one that appealed to me the most was that I could just manage it by myself. Like, I think when I went to the community radio station in Santa Cruz and figured out that really all that was involved in making radio was talking, plus if you push the button higher, it makes it louder. Then I thought this is something I could actually manage, because I was born in 1981, but I'm just a little tiny bit too old to have been able to afford a nice video camera or TV equipment. I just got into it because it was a medium that was within my means and fell in love with it. But I certainly, I've always loved public radio. There's no doubt about that.
800-433-8850. Do you listen to any of Jesse's shows? What do you enjoy about them? Any questions for Jesse Thorne? If you could interview anyone in the entertainment industry, who would it be and why? 800-433-8850. Shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to kojo@wamu.org. In 2007, Public Radio International picked up The Sound of Young America for national distribution, making you the youngest national host in public radio history. Was that a surprise for you?
Yeah, it literally came out of the blue. Like, I just got a phone call on my cell phone. I was working as a receptionist at a nonprofit. I got a phone call on my cell phone and I answered it, which I probably wasn't allowed to do. And it was a guy calling from Minnesota saying, hey, if I'm calling from Public Radio International, if we were interested in distributing your show, would you be interested in having us distribute it? And I said yes, and then I didn't hear from them again for 9 months. So I assumed that my opportunity had
about
passed.
You? Yes.
But yeah, I mean, it was the last thing. It was the last thing I expected would happen, and I had another job, and I was just making my show in my apartment in San Francisco. I had sold my car to buy the microphone and stuff, and it was just me in my house on nights and weekends making the show. So it was a pretty amazing thing to have happen.
You had to sell your car to buy a microphone and stuff?
Yes,
how expensive
true.
A car was this?
This was a $1,600 car. It was okay. a 65 Dart. It was, and it was not a fine example.
Lucky you were able to afford the microphone. I have to start Now you're distributed by NPR. Recent data suggests that the number of young people listening to public radio is dropping. NPR projects that by 2020, its station's audience of 44 years old and younger will be about 30%, half of what it was in 1985. When you hear those numbers, what goes through your mind?
Well, you know, what I think about is this. I've been in the national public radio system, the lowercase letters, since, as you said, 2007. And I go to these conferences and I meet people, and every person I meet tells me about how excited they are to welcome young voices into public media and how excited they are to welcome young audiences into public media. And then they tell me about why young people should be listening to the stuff they're already making. And I don't think, you know, I think that public radio is the best audio content. American public radio is the best audio content in the world, I think. I think there are truly exceptional works being made. But I think that, you know, we're getting to a point where people who make things that are under 40 or so are simply not having the doors opened for them. And unfortunately for the public radio system, at this point, there are other options. Like in 2000, you know, in 2003, when I graduated from college, I applied for a lot of jobs, did not get any of them, and continued to do my show for that reason. And I really only started podcasting in 2005 or so when podcasting got invented, just because I was like, I'm doing my show. I'm going to try and get it to, even if it's 100 more people. And the truth is that if someone graduates from college in 2015 and they apply for a bunch of jobs and they don't get one, what they're going to do is start their own show, distribute it via podcast, and bypass the public media system entirely.
Is the audience of your network of podcasts, Maximum Fun, a different audience than the public radio audience in general?
It is in some ways. I mean, I think that many of the listeners of our podcast network are public radio listeners, though by no means all of them. I think they share certain qualities. I think our audience is largely pretty highly educated. But, you know, I think the audience of our shows tends to be people in from their late teens through their late 30s. And the audience of, the audience of public radio at this point is averaging what? I mean, you probably got the number in front of you, 60-ish at this point. And you know, they're similar people, culturally in many ways, although they're probably a little bit more, they're a little bit more ethnically diverse just by virtue of their generation. But yeah, I mean, it is a different group of people. And there are a lot of people, I think, who are unfortunately alienated by certain things about public radio, who might even love public radio, who don't feel alienated by something that is a little bit more welcoming and silly comedy shows, which is a significant portion of what we do, are maybe a little bit more welcoming.
We'll get to that in a second. But as you go to these conferences, people invariably feel that because you have a successful show distributed by NPR, then you have the formula, and they invariably ask you, well, what do you think public radio should be doing more of? I'll make it different. Who do you think public radio should be hiring more of?
I like that the premise of this question builds in that my show is successful. I mean, our show is by far the least successful NPR show. But, I think that there's a couple of things that public radio could be doing, and to be fair, is starting to do. One of them is to actively reach outside of the world that is naturally connected to public radio. So that means that, you know, you have to be, you know, I feel like everyone I meet that works at a public radio station went to Oberlin sometimes. You know what I mean? And it's like if you're not on the campus of the HBCUs near where your station is, if you're not reaching out into the community to do your hiring, what you will get is people who will replicate the things that you're already making. And I think to some extent also, and this is something that I've changed about my company in the last couple of years, although it really took some It really took some soul searching and number crunching to do it. I think you have to pay everybody, including interns. I know that I wasn't in a position to take an unpaid internship when I was a kid, and that's part of why I couldn't find a job. And if it hadn't been that I had kept doing my show and managed to find success that way, I would have left public media right then. And I think that when you don't pay interns, which many public radio institutions don't, you reinforce a system of privilege that sort of replicates what's already on the air.
You quickly mentioned HBCUs. For those people who may not know what HBCUs are, they're historically black colleges and universities, and there's probably one in your neighborhood that you may not be aware of.
Sure.
Onto the telephones. Here is Diana in Purcellville, Virginia. Diana, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hey, hey Jesse, hey Kojo. You are both of my favorite shows.
Aw.
And
you're just saying that.
No, I'm not. And Jesse, I love the outshots at the end of your programs.
Oh, thank you so much.
Sometimes they make me tear up, and there's a couple that I've retweeted, and when I figured out how to do that finally, and that Babe the Pig one is one that I listen to over and over again.
Kojo, you should know, if you don't already know, that I'm the world's foremost proponent of the film Babe, Pig in the City, the sequel to Babe from the director of Mad Max.
Yeah, that was just one of the best outshouts I've heard. There's a couple other ones, but thank you so much, Jesse, for what you do.
Oh, thank you. That's really kind of you.
And Diana, thank you very much for your call. We got an email from Sarah in Foggy Bottom who says, I just wanted to say that even 65-year-olds listen to Bullseye. Uh-oh, is that a problem? People younger are not listening? Yes, people younger are listening also, Sarah.
Yeah, I want to be, like, absolutely clear. When I make Bullseye, my goal, you know, one of my heroes is this guy named Calafisana, who now writes for The New Yorker, used to write for The New York Times. And he used to write about hip hop for The Times. And I'm a pretty serious hip hop head. And what I always loved about his writing was, you know, he was one of the few people in mainstream media. And obviously there isn't a lot of sort of thoughtful, in-depth coverage of hip hop in mainstream media. But he was one of the few people who could bring real insight for somebody who was already deeply engaged in hip hop culture, but also welcome people who were just, you know, New York Times readers. Like he could achieve both of those goals. And that's always been my goal with Bullseye, that, you know, there will be some artists on the show who are the kind of person who, you know, it might be, you know, last time we were in D.C., Ian MacKay was on the show.
Yeah,
he's a wonderful dude. And, you know, he is the kind of guy who not everybody knows who Ian is, although he's a lot more well-known here in D.C., but he's a guy who changes people's lives, right? And whether you're the person who had your life changed by Bill Withers or whether you're the person whose life was changed by Ian MacKay, I think that you can listen to the other interview, the one by the artist who didn't change your life, and learn about them and come to appreciate them through Bullseye. Or at least that's my goal.
Bullseye is just one of the programs you produce at Maximum Fun, but it's the only one that's aired on traditional public radio. The rest are available for download as podcasts or streaming online. What do you see as the difference between a public radio show and a podcast?
It's an interesting question. I mean, I also adapted a podcast for public radio. I helped produce the public radio version of Mark Maron's WTF. And I think that the primary difference, I mean, the greatest difference is that podcasts require kind of an affirmative action. They require a choice. So when you're listening to the radio, you are kind of tapping into a stream of content. And that's one of the reasons that news works so great on the radio or something as community focused as this show. But I think when you're making a podcast, you have to make something that motivates people to go through the process of subscribing to it, which is still a little bit of a hassle. Mm-hmm. So it has to be something that has a really deep connection to people. And it can be a smaller number of people. But it has to really get its hooks into you.
We mentioned Ian MacKay, so we should mention that we're going to be tweeting out a link to our interview that we did with Ian MacKay from 2012. You think Fugazi, you think Ian MacKay, but you think anything having to do with punk rock here in the Washington area, you also think Ian MacKay and his association with go-go musician. Well, he's just...
Kojo, like, for me, I'm not a punk rock guy, but Ian is one of my independent media heroes. Like, Ian is someone who has demonstrated that you can make art independently in the United States, make a living at it, and do it morally. And that really means a lot to me.
Our guest is Jesse Thorne. He's the host of a number of public radio programs and podcasts, including Bullseye, Jordan, Jesse Go, and Judge John Hodgman, all produced by his company, Maximum Fun. Questions or comments for Jesse? 800-433-8850. You can send email to kojo@wamu.org. We'll be taking a short break. If you have called, stay on the line. We'll get back to your calls. If the lines are busy, shoot us a tweet at Kojo Show. I'm Kojo Namdi. Feel is their appointed duty. They keep trying to tell me all you want to do is use me.
Hi, it's Diane. The next meeting of my book club is on Wednesday, May 31st at 1 p.m. Eastern. I'll host a discussion of Mad Honey by Jodi Picou and Jennifer Finney Boylan, followed by a conversation with the authors. Find out more and register at dianereem.org/bookclub.
Welcome back. Our guest is Jesse Thorne, host of a number of public radio programs and podcasts, including Bullseye, Jordan, Jesse Go, and Judge John Hodgman, all produced by his company, Maximum Fun. A lot of people believe that in order to attract young people to public radio, you have to do young people things. Yet your favorite interview is not an interview with someone who is exactly young.
Yeah, well, you know, we were talking about Bill Withers during the break. And, you know, I think, honestly, as a I'm barely a young person anymore. I'm 34, but I still have about 20 years of being a young person in public radio. But I think that my cultural references certainly are much more broad than my father's generation's cultural references. You know, I think that the baby boom gave the baby boomers' rebellion against their parents gave my generation the liberty to, you know, to stretch our cultural wings across generations. And it's, you know, Bill Withers is one of my favorite musicians, top couple. And he's, you know, Curtis Mayfield's passed on. So the fact that I got to speak with Mr. Withers was one of the great honors of my life.
And this is what young people were interested in hearing.
Most people get over the hump thanks to the kind of heedless optimism of being a 19-year-old or whatever. You know, they know they have this thing inside them, and the thing that gets them to get over the scary bits is just that they're, you know, they just don't care because they're a teenager. Whereas you took that step when you were a grown man.
And that's why you're sitting here talking to me, because I ain't most people. You know.
Okay.
How many most people do you go to the trouble of talking to? I'm giving you a hard time. But that's true. You see, I've been most people. I spent some part of my life as most people, into my 30s as most people. Once I transitioned out of that most people category and did something, you know, whatever it was, you know, then a different set of rules apply.
That was Bill Withers talking with Jesse Thorne. There's something about Bill Withers' tendency for logic.
He's a terrifying man. The clarity of his thinking and the depth of his wit and the depth of the feeling when he speaks, you know, is, I got out of that interview feeling like I just run a marathon, but in a good way. I mean, also yeah. That kind of one, because I think it's kind of a cliche to describe an older person as wise, you know, but I think Bill Withers is very legitimately wise, and his wisdom is very hard earned.
from the very first song you ever heard by Bill Withers, when he was in his 30s,
yeah,
the wisdom was there.
When I think of Bill Withers, I actually think of another interview I did with a filmmaker who made a beautiful documentary called Mr. Rogers and Me about Mr. Rogers. And one of the insights about Fred Rogers that he had was that Fred Rogers' principle was always to be simple and deep. And that, I think, is both the beautiful thing about Fred Rogers, who's one of the reasons I'm in public media.
And Withers.
And Bill Withers, is that they both are able to very plainly tap into the deepest parts of what it is to be human.
Well, enough of me. Here's Mike in Alexandria, Virginia. Mike, your turn.
Thank you for having me on call, Joe. I was just listening to your show, and you guys were, the average listener was 20, I mean 60. I started being a member since last year.
How old are you now?
I am 21 now. I do a lot of driving. I drive for a living, and I have 88.5 all the time on my radio. And I'm a sustaining member, too. So you guys are doing a great job reaching out to younger listeners.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Thank you very much. And, you guys are doing a great job. I know I'm one of the very few this age that listen to NPR, but I'm just letting you know that you guys are doing a great job.
That you're listening. Thank you very much for your call, Mike, and thank you very much for listening. You're the host of Bullseye, a pop culture interview show, and the co-host of Jordan, Jesse, Go, a comedy program. You also appear on Judge John Hodgman, a knockoff of the Judge Judy type shows that air on daytime.
A knockoff, huh? A little value judgment embedded in that one.
Well, I'm addicted to these shows. Do you use different voices depending on which show you're on?
Yeah, I mean, that's very much the case. I mean, I think on Bullseye is a show that is not about me. I mean, in some ways it's about my editorial judgment, but really it's about bringing out the stories and experiences of these amazing artists who are on the show. Jordan Jesse Go is a completely absurd, silly, vulgar, profane comedy show that is absolutely about me and my co-host Jordan, who started The Sound of Young America with me when we were in college and is now a comedy writer who writes on At Midnight. And Judge John Hodgman is very much John's show. John is a longtime contributor to The Daily Show and was the PC in the Mac versus PC ads and so on and so forth, an author. And on that show, I'm the bailiff to his judge. I like to think of myself as being something like Roz from Night Court. And you'd think I would say Bull because I'm tall and bald, but no, it's Roz. And on that show, what I really like is it's the only show that I do where I'm not responsible for being the host. I mean, you know what that's like, Kojo. Like,
of course.
You always have to have something to say, even when you don't have something to say. And on Judge John Hodgman, I only have to talk when I have something funny to say. And I have a great catchphrase, which is shut your pie hole, which it's really fun to tell people to shut their pie hole and then have them like it. Like, that is like the greatest privilege of the world.
You call yourself a comedian, but Bullseye is a journalistic program. It's made up of interviews with pop culture newsmakers. Do you consider yourself a journalist as well?
That's a tough question, Gojo. I mean, when my show was at Public Radio International, it was an entertainment show. I asked them one time, am I a journalist or an entertainer? And they're like, well, which do you? And I'm like, maybe I feel more like an entertainer. And they're like, then you can be an entertainer. At NPR, NPR is a journalism organization, and they said, no, Jesse, you're a journalist, you know? No no marching and rallies or – I don't know. I wasn't doing a lot of that anyway. But and I realized that, you know, I guess I never thought of myself as a journalist, mostly because I didn't come from a journalism background. I never took journalism classes or worked as a reporter, and I would have felt a little bit like a fraud presenting myself as a journalist, whereas I had – I had studied acting and done improv and sketch comedy professionally. And but I realized that when I'm on Bullseye, you know, I am enabling people to tell their stories, which in substantial part is what a journalist does, you know, sort of rearranging and representing the world for people in the context of nonfiction. So I guess I am a journalist, but I always feel bad because I feel like I should at the very least have one of those fedoras with a little piece of cardboard stuck in it that says press. Or like I should be just fresh back from a war zone or something like that. But Yeah, I mean, I think of myself, if pressed, I think of myself more as an entertainer than a journalist, but I guess I do a fair amount of both.
You're a journalist, except when you're not.
Yeah, that's
here
fair.
Is Cap. Here is Cameron in Arlington, Virginia. Cameron, your turn.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Good afternoon, Cameron.
I'm a recent NYU film graduate, and I've been applying to jobs at NPR and PBS, and there seem to be no jobs for any young recent graduates doing anything. So, I mean, it's driving me to exactly the point that you made, that I just need to create things on my own.
And get picked up by the people who didn't give you jobs.
Cameron, I found that people, you know, that was absolutely my experience. And I didn't know anyone in the industry or in entertainment or anything. And I felt like I was, you know, I felt like I was out in the cold. And now when people ask me about that, I wrote a piece for a website called transom.org called Make Your Thing. And I've been doing a talk around it, which is about the fact that, you know, the great advantage that people like you and I think people up to about as old as me have is that, you know, you can access an audience directly now in a way that you never could before. You know, I think folks who are our parents' ages had to go through gatekeepers to make something and share it with people. And now, you know, you can start a Tumblr, you can start a great Twitter feed, you can write something on Medium, and it still has to be great, and it's, you know, nobody's giving you an audience. But, you know, you have the opportunity to, you know, take the tools and make things in a way that folks simply didn't have before. And that is awesome. So I would encourage you, Cameron, to do that in addition to applying for jobs. I have got no problem with getting a job, but there's no reason that you shouldn't just start making movies and seeing how they go.
Thank you for your call, Cameron. Here's Kashis in Brooklyn, New York. Kashis, your turn.
Hey there. It's Cassius, actually.
Cassius.
Yeah, thank you. Last Friday night, Jesse did this live Make Your Thing show here in New York City, and it was shown over the WNYC website for free at the same time. I think anyone can still watch it. And I had never seen him do anything live or in person before. And I just got to say, it was really great, really inspiring, and he mentions how a lot of people or some people in the listening audience describe him as insufferable over the radio show. he was very cool. He was much more a cool person in person. It was really great, really fun. And I just want to commend him on that show and the live show. It was really great.
Thank you, Cassius, and thank you for coming to that. I do have a natural smugness that I haven't been able to shake. I don't know what causes it, but I'm sure there's people out there being like, yeah, that is what I don't like about this guy on Kojo's show.
A lot of the people you interview are celebrities, but as Cassius just indicated, you've become something of a celebrity yourself. A fan recognized you in the airport on your way here, but you're also going to get the negative comments that people can get, such as you're insufferable.
Yeah.
Getting used to that?
Yeah, no, not at all. Kojo, not at all. I think if I could do the work that I do and not be a celebrity in the slightest bit, I would take that deal in a second. But, you know, it's worth it. You know, I really care about the work that I do and about touching people's lives. I mean, like, you know, we're doing this show here tonight.
You're here in D.C. for a taping of Bullseye in front of a live audience tonight. What does that audience add to the program?
Well, it's...
I should say in front of an audience. All audiences are live.
Yeah, exactly. Well...
No dead audiences.
I did a show in a cemetery a couple of weeks ago, so that was actually in front
audience.
Of a dead audience. Yeah. You know, there's something about... You know, when I do these shows, after the show, I just kind of hang out and talk to people. And, you know, I think when you come to people through those earbuds, it is a really intimate and special thing. And I think of my work, sometimes I think of my work as being frivolous or something, you know, especially my comedy stuff. And when I do a show like this and people come to me and tell me ways that they're, life has been changed by these stupid jokes that I make or by a conversation that I had with a rapper I admire. And that's reason enough for me to get out on the road to hear that from people.
Jesse Thorne, host of a number of public radio programs and podcasts, including Bullseye, Jordan, Jesse Go, and Judge John Hodgman, all produced by Maximum Fun. Have maximum fun and keep impacting our lives.
Jesse. Thank you so much for having me, Kojo.
And thank you all for listening. I'm Kojo Namdi. Coming up tomorrow on the Kojo Namdi Show, the hardware behind our software. Tech Tuesday explores the tubes, cables, and networks that create the Internet's infrastructure. Then at 1, from Black Power to Black Lives Matter, Pulitzer Prize-winning critic Margot Jefferson on growing up a member of the black elite during the Civil Rights Movement. The Kojo Namdi Show, noon till 2 tomorrow on WAMU 88.5 and streaming at kojoshow.org.
Good afternoon. This is WAMU 88.5. It's 1:59. Sunny skies, 42 degrees in southeast Washington. Wind chill of 36 outside at this hour. Join
Thanks for listening to the Kojo Namdi Show. And if you're already a member of WAMU 88.5, thank you for your support. If not, it's easy to give online at WAMU.org. Just click the donate button and thanks.